One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Today on The Grave Talks, Horror in the Heartland, a conversation with Richard Kutschall. Richard Kutschall spent his childhood in the quiet town of Parsons, Kansas, in a house that was rumored to be haunted. Growing up in this tiny town in the middle of the country was anything but peaceful, despite the fact that it should have been. It was inevitable that he would spend his childhood surrounded by strange occurrences such as seeing apparitions, hearing voices, encountering doppelgangers, and possibly even demonic beings that could only be described as horrifying. This would ignite a fascination with the supernatural that would last a lifetime. On The Grave Talks, this is his account. Today on The Grave Talks, we hear his account of what happened.
You know, it really, I think it did stem from my experiences in the house. You know, we moved in when I was about, I would say, you know, around six maybe. That's when I first, and I didn't know what to really think of it at first. You're just a kid, so you just sort of have like almost like a physiological reaction to things. Like, you know, where your hair stands up, or I remember when we first came into the house, the very first memory I have of, you know, it was this dark, older house built, you know, I think it was updated in the 50s, but I think originally it was, you know, maybe 30s or something. Mm-hmm. But, and then another, you know, I get that point of the story later, but another thing we learned was that it actually was built on a foundation over another foundation. So there used to be a house there before. So who knows how long, you know, it'd been there, but it was just kind of dark, foreboding, had a lot of wood, you know, built-ins, but dark panel. So the house, you know, it was two story and it really, you know, it was kind of freaky. It had those, and of course I didn't know what the story was at the time, but it had those windows like at the front of it, like the Amityville Horror kind of, where they almost look like two eyes at the front, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, when we got there, I remember, you know, my brother and I were pretty excited to go up and, because you want to see your new house and everyone's talking about it and stuff. And, you know, we went up the house and went into it and we tried to get in our room and tried to see what we were, where we were going to be sleeping. And there was an inbuilt, I remember a built-in toy box. And that was pretty cool, you know, for us as kids. And, but then I remember I left something, you know, I remember going upstairs and feeling like there were all these people watching me, mm-hmm. that we weren't alone, that there were people around. And I was a kid, so you don't know what to really think about it. You just think, oh, it's scary, you know, what's happening?
Sure.
And you just kind of, that's a reaction, you know? So I left something upstairs. We came downstairs. We kind of hightailed it downstairs. And I remember, you know, telling my dad I'd left this, you know, had a favorite stuffed toys to carry around. And I said, oh, I left that. He said, where's that at? And I said, it's upstairs. And he said, well, go back up and get it. And I said, no. There are people up there watching us. You know, there's people up there watching me. And he said, oh, what are you talking about? You know, just typical, yeah. How parents handle things.
Sure. Dismissive.
So Yeah. So those experiences, I think, you know, that was the being in that house was what sort of galvanized me, like thinking about the paranormal and stuff. And I, you know, and then in high school and middle school, I started kind of reading about it at the time. And there wasn't that much material available at the time. You know, it wasn't like now what it is. Mm-hmm. But there were people like, you know, what was his name? Daniel Cohen was an author that had a lot of things about some haunted or monsters, kind of paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
Lloyd Auerbach, you know, there's just these kind of, you know, I used to read about Harry Price, you know, and people like that. So it's just to pass, you know, you just wonder what it is because it's so defying to everything you sort of know that it's very scary, you know?
Sure. Sure. You had this experience and your dad kind of dismissed it. How did it go on from there?
Well, you know, the whole family eventually started having experiences. Mm-hmm. But at first, you know, it was always one of the things, you know, about it. I mean, you kind of have these typical sort of experiences you hear about with haunted areas. One feeling was, again, like, you know, that you were always kind of people were around. Somebody else was there. They were watching you. Mm-hmm. I remember, when you were alone in the house later on, you know, I was left alone as a kid, you would feel, I mean, I think there were several spirits in the house. So you would sort of feel somebody or a group, you know, a couple come downstairs mm-hmm. and sort of, because they seem to, most of them seem to be upstairs, that they seem to stay up there. But there would be time, you would almost feel like the presence, you almost feel the energy come down in the house and just to come down to either greet you or, you know, sometimes it felt malevolent. Sometimes it felt almost kind of like playing a joke on you. Sometimes it felt, you know, sometimes it felt just like they were there just observing, you know, but you felt like this real presence. And so that was one thing that everyone always felt in the house. And another thing, you know, and all the family members, just a creepy feeling, you know. And then another thing were cold spots, you know, used to hear. You'd hear people talking, kind of like a murmur. It sounded almost like somebody was underwater, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Then you'd investigate, and you'd be no one around. You'd also hear people like upstairs, particularly upstairs. It wasn't always centered upstairs, but in the room that my brother and I, when we first moved in the house, we shared, it was the most active, probably, and used to hear someone walking or closing the door. One time I heard, you know, I had some weights upstairs, and this was in my room, which is an adjoining room. It wasn't the room that I was previously talking about, but I had, you know, I was a teenager, you lift weights, you know, trying to lift weights, I had a little weight set. And I heard somebody pick up the, and my family was, we were all there. You could hear someone picking up the barbells and just dropping them, like, boom, you know, on the floor. Mm-hmm. Very heavy, you know. I mean, you're talking maybe 100, you know, 80 pounds. I was trying to bench press, you know, so it was like a lot.
Sure.
You know? And that type of thing. And then you want me just to go into some just particular stories from different, or just my stories and family members? Okay.
I want to hear both. I mean, let's just kind of work it like as we're talking as it progressed.
Okay, sure. So I think as it progressed, I think it sort of, like I said, you know, I'm not, you know, I know a lot of people associate stuff like paranormal stuff. If you have some people, oh, this is evil, this is good, this is, you know, the devil or something like that. I mean, some of the things, I mean, I still, like you said, it still sort of triggers you where you think, what is this? Like, what happened? Like, what's
sure.
kind of what does that mean towards us as human beings? You know?
Yeah.
Like you know, where is this real? Mm-hmm. And, so I remember, particularly, closer when I was around, well, when I was still around probably about 6 or 7, maybe 8, somewhere around that range. I remember one thing that was, one particularly, kind of scarier moment. And that's what I mean. Sometimes it was scary. Sometimes it was kind of just weird. Sometimes it was just strange. But But there are times when it just felt like it was malevolent or something, like it wanted to try to frighten you. Mm-hmm. And so I remember my brother and I, we shared this room. So we we had a kind of this big brass kind of big poster bed kind of these things. I think that's what they used to call them.
Sure.
And kind of high up, you know, for a kid, kind of high up. And, you know, I remember one particular instance. I woke up and I saw like these, and this, I think this happened twice. I saw like these, sort of things. I saw this one thing at the foot of the bed, kind of like that classic story you hear, the thing at the foot of the bed, but it was like it looked like an imp-like creature almost. I mean, I couldn't, like, the only way I can describe it, it kind of almost had like a, like almost like you could sort of see something protruding from its head. You could see its two eyes. And at first I had the outline of like, I thought it's the cat.
Yeah.
You know, the cat's staring at me. And, but you know, then you realize the cat can't, you know, the cat's not 3 or 3.5 feet tall or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So it just sat there kind of, you know, kind of, blink, you know, I don't remember it blinking or anything, just kind of looking at me. And, I was really, you know, super frightened. And of course after a while, I mustered up the courage that I could put the covers over my head, you know, and try to wait for it to leave. Mm-hmm. And it must have, you know, I'd say it happened twice. It happened 2 or 3 times, but it was enough times that I started actually sleeping my BB gun when I was a kid.
Sure. Gotta have something.
And, that ended after my mom found it. But I used to also put a ring of these toys around my bed as some sort of protection. You know, I had like, it sounds ridiculous, but I had these Shogun warriors and stuff that used to make these big kind of robotic kind of warrior things. And I used to put those around my bed and just circle my bed with toys to think like, well, this will keep them away. You know?
Sure, sure.
And so that was one of the scarier things. And I'm an artist, so I've actually made some representations of some of that stuff, some prints of things that happen. But and then my brother, you know, he had an incident that, and some of the stuff that my brother and I experienced, like, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I want to talk and kind of unpack that before we go to your brother's incident, because I got some questions about that. Let's dive into that. So this thing in your room, it looks, you know, you thought it was the cat at first, so then you describe it as kind of an imp-like creature. I mean, what is mm-hmm. going through your mind? What had you experienced prior to this to give you any sort of reference point, if anything at all, as to what you're seeing?
Well, I didn't really, you know, the only thing I can, you know, is sort of the representations of the devil or something like that, you know, and that's what I mean. I don't want to ascribe to it necessarily. It was the evil or sure. whatever. I don't know.
But
as I've gotten older and kind of done more research. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, if you have those, you know, even if it wasn't something malevolent, whatever it was, it was representing itself in kind of a scary way to you.
It goes into, I felt like it was like an impish like creature, what people would sort of feel like an imp. And I've read of haunted places kind of having these creatures, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know if that was the spirit, whatever it was, you know, I mean, I don't want to say it was demonic necessarily, but I don't know. Whatever this thing was, I don't know if that was trying to sort of throw something at me to say, hey, you know, this, I'm going to scare you, mm-hmm. you know, or what that was. I'm sorry. Did you have
something
else to add?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Continue on. So you were also saying that you had experiences, sure. you had that one yourself, and then your brother came into having one, or you had one together.
Oh, yeah. Around my brother was 2 years younger than me. So around the same, and you know, I always think the spirits sort of, it's very easy for them to target kids, because I think kids, for one thing, they're much more tuned to the world, you know, and the environment, and because you're smaller and you just, you know, and you just don't have as much sort of in your head in a way about thinking about stuff. And I think that you're sort of, I guess there's that saying, you're closer to the veil in a way.
Sure.
And you sort of, I think it's easier for kids. And I think, you know, my brother, so I'm not a natural, my biology is my, you know, my brother is actually from my, biologically, I had a different father than my brother.
Okay.
So my brother, his family seems to have like a lot of psychic, phenomena in their family, history of it, and seeing things and hearing things. So I think he was actually even more attuned to it than I might have been, but we didn't share a lot of stories till later on, which was kind of strange.
Sure.
Even though we shared a bed, you know?
Yeah.
He would tell me. So the story I was saying about him is that he woke up in the middle of the night, same kind of thing, but he saw the wall on fire. It looked like the room was on fire. And so he started freaking out at first, and it just faded away. And then, so he recalled that to me, which is very interesting because later on we would actually see, we would actually find like these. So the house was actually built on another foundation. It was an old railroad town. And this is in Kansas, which, in the town of Parsons, actually.
Okay.
So it was built in this, it was an old railroad town. And this historian told me later that that was a really old area town close to the railroad, and that there's a problem if something would have burnt down because lamb was such a premium. And so we found actually burnt kind of wood underneath the house, and we found older tools. So the one encounter, I had a very lucid dream, and I was with my best friend at the time, and we're still friends today, but we were in the future in this dream. So we were teenagers, and we were walking along this sort of canyon road. It almost looks southwestern or something. And we saw this boar kind of by the side of the road. And all of a sudden, this boar sort of transformed itself into this red, kind of scraggly, almost like a hag sort of figure. And she started chasing us, you know. So we were both running from her down the road. And I remember at one point, we both decided to jump to different sides of the ditch to try to get away from her. And she jumped over me. And I remember, you know, waking up just with her hands, like her claws, kind of in my face. And so, and it was this is really crazy nightmare. So you wake up in a cold sweat, and I remember looking over and seeing my brother, he was still asleep. And I thought, wow, what a dream, you know, and I was just a kid. So it was just really freaking me out. I heard at the doorway, and there was this apparition, this figure of me, and it was see-through, and it was my age. So it looked like just a replica of me almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it had this. And so I don't really remember walking to the bed. I just remember it sort of coming to the bed, closer to the bed. And I was just petrified of it. I didn't know what to think. And it had this black, kind of looked like almost like a scroll or some sort of package in its hand. And it held it out to me to take it from me. And it had a white kind of ribbon sort of thing around it. And it held it out for me to grab it. And I, of course, shook my head no and just was freaked out. I couldn't even hardly move.
Yeah.
And eventually I just worked up the strength to get under the covers again. You know, when you're a kid, you think the covers are going to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And I got under the covers and just laid there hoping it would go away. And, you know, I remember I fell asleep eventually and it did, you know, it was gone in the morning. Course.
So you said you were lucid dreaming, but then you got back under the covers. So did you awaken at some point and then you saw this figure in your room, or you were lucid dreaming that you were in your room seeing this?
No, I woke at one point. I'm very sure I was awake. You know, I woke just as this sort of witch-like figure was sort of at my face jumping over and she was going to grab me. And you wake up with her hands in your face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when, and then I was getting ready to try to go see my, go to my parents' room to tell them, you know, I was scared. And I looked over and I saw this figure standing there in the doorway, and it was me, you know, of course. So,
yeah, I mean, that's very terrifying to see something like that, where it's a reflection of yourself. Did you eventually get up and go tell your parents after this incident?
Oh, no. I just laid there. I put the covers up and I could not, you know, I tried to use the covers as a defense and just laid there afraid to move. I was hoping it'd go away.
Yeah.
Because I had this, you know, it had wanted me to take the package.
Yeah.
And to this day, you know, I had a feeling not to take it. And I don't know what was in that or what that was that it really actually wanted me to do. I just felt like it was something it wanted me to take.
Yeah.
And it was very weird, you know, and I've read about doppelgangers and I've read about, you know, that sort of phenomenon. And I have no idea, you know, that that's a really perplexing thing to this day, what that was or what it was trying to do.
Yeah, it's extremely bizarre to have that. And it's very scary. So you have this experience. Do you eventually, you know, you get up the next day. Do you ever bring these things back up to your parents or your brother bring them back up to your parents and discuss any of this? Or how is that handled?
Oh yeah, I did. I did tell them, you know, and my parents at first, I think, you know, as growing up, as now being the age I am now, I sort of understand, you know, because my stepson has had some paranormal experiences, and I sort of understand how you don't want to, you sort of don't, in a way, you want to protect your children from this sort of thing. So you don't want to, like, afraid of too much panic. You know, you're afraid of not, you sort of, you know, and also I think that sometimes the more power you give them, you know, the more powerful they become. So mm-hmm. I think that you want to be careful about the, you know, how much, you know, I personally believe as a living person, you have more power than they do, but you know, but you have to be careful about how much you hand that to them. And so I don't, you know, my parents, I think they were just dismissive. I don't think they were really conscious of the subject or anything, mm-hmm. but I think they didn't, you know, what to do, you know, cause I think they started having experiences, you know, and, but they had sunk all their money in this house and they couldn't move. So I think they felt like, well, this is it. Like, we're, you know, I don't know. And so some of the things you want me to shift to maybe with some things happened to my, I have more stories, but do you want me to shift to my mom and dad for just for a second, their experiences?
We'll go to that in a little bit. I'd love to hear more. And I want to ask a little bit more about what you've talked about, first. You're talking about earlier, your brother said he saw it would look like the house was on fire. Is that something that you witnessed as well? Did you see that fire look, or was that something he just saw on his own?
That was something he just saw. I never mm-hmm. saw it, but we did find the remaining of seemed like some burnt stuff under the house.
Almost,
to me signified there'd been a fire one time.
What did you know anything about the history of the fire? Were you able to ever look any of that up and see what exactly happened? Was it, you know, a fire and everyone got out? Was it something where it was a tragedy, people died, or did you ever find anything of that out?
Well, there was a town historian at the time, and I think he's deceased now, and I actually got in touch with him. And because my aunt, who's very psychic, and she's had a lot of great, more stories for you.
Yeah.
Really great stories about, you know, finding a murder weapon in her house and a ghost that ensued and just all this stuff. So just crazy stuff. But she actually is really interested in this stuff. And she also does genealogy, and she actually looked up the deeds from the house, the property deeds and the history, and gave them to me. And so I asked a historian about this, and he said, well, you know, he said that area of town was very old. It was right by the railroad. So it was one of the first areas settled. And he said, you know, even though the deed shows around 1904, someone actually purchased the property and there was a building there, a house there. He said, chances are there was probably something there before, but the records were so shoddy and nobody was keeping great track of things. And he said, so there very well could have been a fire. And he said that would explain why there was another foundation, because they probably just would have built over it because mm-hmm. it was so quick that it was going up so fast because the railroad, the town being built.
Sure.
So, but he personally did not know of any murders or any sort of things there. But so this is where it gets really interesting too, mm-hmm. is so my brother, years later as adults, he was working, he's a machinist. He was working at a place there in my hometown. And he was talking to a colleague of his just on lunch break. And they were just talking about places they had lived around town, you know, they were both from there. And he said, oh, you are where you used to live. But they didn't know each other before then. And he said, oh, you know, and the guy said, my brother said, you know, the address of this place. It was actually on Crawford Street. I mean, I don't think I have to hide that. But
sure.
And he said, the guy just looked at him and he said, we're out on Crawford. And he told him where it was. And he said, oh, my God, you know, he said, my family lived there about 10 years probably before your family.
Oh, wow.
And he just looked straight at my brother and he said, did anything weird ever happen to you in that house? And he said, oh, what do you mean? And my brother was trying, you know, he said, I mean, like, you know, stuff you can't explain, ghosts, like weird stuff. And he said, you know, my family still calls that the creepy house. So, you know, they had experience there too. So he sort of listed some things and went in, and actually, he actually emailed me some of the things that happened to his family in that house. And, but one of the really interesting things about that is at the time we had a neighbor. So they had lived there around 10 years before us. We had this older woman that lived beside us, and I had always known her, you know, she was elderly when I knew her. And of course she was around 10 years younger when his family moved in, and her husband, the time I knew her, was deceased. But when his family lived there, he was still living. And he came out after this guy's family was looking at the property, and he said, are you guys thinking about renting that property? Because they just rented it.
Yeah.
And he said, they said, yeah, yeah. And then the guy said, I wouldn't do that. He said, there's something strange about that house. And he said, everyone moves really quickly. And they said, oh, okay. And he said, you know, someone died in the house, in the basement. There was an accident. And so he relayed that story to my brother, and my brother, you know, told it to me, and it's kind of the weird thing about that. So that sort of leads into the thing about one of the things that happened, and this is where the historian didn't know. He said, I don't know of anything that happened, you know, but of course he wouldn't know all the things of people dying or accidents he said, one of the weird things in my dad happened to my dad is he would be, who's now deceased, my stepdad, he would be alone in the house, and he hear like something scratching at the basement door, like something trying to get out the basement door. And then he would answer the door and look, and he could find no animal or nothing to sort of warrant it. Or there were no scratches on the door. It was just a sound of something scratching. So that's a weird tie into that too.
It sounds, I mean, it just chilling. What were some of the things that the former owner expressed to you in that email that happened to them in this house?
Oh, okay. He kind of recounted the same thing, just hearing voices, footsteps, you know, cold spots in the house. He talked about the bathroom being a very creepy spot. Which it was, you know, it was kind of, and there was actually an extra back room that was built on later to the house that was attached to that bathroom. But there was a window that you could see, you know, used to probably go out to the outside, but after they put the back room on it, actually you could see into the back room, which we used as a laundry room and stuff. And so you could see that. And he talked about feeling like there was somebody on the other side of that bathroom staring, you know, looking.
Yeah.
So
just, very ominous feelings and very similar. Did that make you feel any better about, you know, hearing that other people have had experiences in the house just as you have?
Oh yeah. Validation, you know, because you really wonder, you know, I know, and I don't know why this happens, but you know, I think it's really a matter of, how open we are to experiences like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an artist, so I'm really used to trying to channel and plug into things, sort of my intuition.
Sure.
But a lot of people don't have that background, so they're just totally dismissive. Like, they may hear something, may never think twice about it, mm-hmm. You know? And, you know, as I've gotten older, I've become more skeptical sometimes about stuff, and I really usually try to look for a logical sort of explanation to things. Yeah. But, you know, I think because family, we had a family actually buy the house after we had moved out.
Yeah.
My mom sold the house, and they reported very little. Just every now and then appliances would go off or something like that, but very little activity, you know, as comparison to what our family had experienced.
Let's talk about some of your experiences as well, because I want to get to your parents, but I know you have a few more things that you wanted to get to that occurred in the house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, another thing, just a second, I made some notes here. Let's see. Well, one thing that I remember pretty vividly is, and this is just a, this is kind of, now this was another frightening, very frightening experience. This is what I mean about it being, you know, there, it felt most of the time malicious, but so my at this time, like my parents had, they were went out of town and they took my brother with me, with them. And I was actually doing like a karate event or something. It was like a tournament. I had to be back in the morning. We was out of town, so my instructors were going to pick me up. And you know, honestly, I was a teenager at this time. So, but I had a real fear. And I think it's funny when you have a house like that. Like I remember years later when I was older in my 20s, you know, I went back and visited the house. Now it's now torn down. Okay. So. But I visited the house. It was still standing for some reason. I couldn't believe it, but I went inside actually. And I looked and I actually addressed the house. You know, I say, hey, you know, I'm coming in, because you almost feel like it's a living entity and you have to respect it, you know?
Yeah.
And so going back to that experience, I was terrified. You know, I thought I was not looking forward to coming home and spending the night in the house by myself, because I knew that if you were alone in the house, that was when you're the most vulnerable. And I remember being, you know, afraid of the dark until I was well into my upper teens, you know.
Sure.
Not wanting to sleep without the light on. And so I thought, you know, my mom and dad had this, you know, one of those water beds at the time that everyone, it was such a big deal at the time, but now it's terrible for your back. You
yes,
know?
Yes. Yep, remember the without time. The back. Was there a lot of was there a lot of paneling in the room that had the water bed too? Because that seemed to always go hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, so anyway, I thought, well, I'm gonna sleep in the water bed. You know, they're gone. I'm gonna sleep in their room. So, and their room had been, you know, there was things that happened. Like my mom used to hear her name being called sometimes from the closet. Sounds like the hallway. Sometimes you would hear someone in the hallway talking next to that bedroom, which was on the first floor. My mom actually had woken up and she had seen an apparition staring at her. And he was like this older man. He was dressed like in 1920s type of clothing or so. And he was just kind of looking at her, you know, staring, standing over, looking at her. And she, you know, and then he just kind of dissolved in front of her. And he was transparent. He was kind of, you know, glowing kind of apparition.
Sure.
And so she kind of kept it to herself for the most part. She didn't say a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to sleep in that room just because of the waterbed at the time. And so I was sleeping in the room and I felt like this, I felt like something touched my feet. And it felt like something's kind of tickling your feet.
Yeah.
And I jumped, you know, really quickly. And I looked around and I thought, okay, the cats are in the room. There's something. We had two cats. I thought, okay, the cats are in the room. They're messing with me, you know. So I looked up and I went around the room looking. I couldn't find the cats. And I turned the light on, you know. I was looking around and I said, oh, okay. You know, I don't know what that was. Maybe it's just the cover. So I lay back down, laying there. It starts happening again, you know. Somebody's like it's almost, you can feel just someone touching your feet very lightly, like they're trying to tickle you. So I jumped up again. I was getting really scared by then. And I thought, okay, it's a bug or something. So I shook the sheets out and started looking around, you know, and couldn't find anything. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm starting to freak out. And to this day, I don't know why I just didn't go in another room and get the heck out of there. But like, I thought, okay. So I laid down again. And this time I was laying there and, I felt the same thing. A few minutes go by, I feel the same thing. Someone like just touching my feet and my ankles, like trying to tickle me. And by this time, I was just so scared that I thought something's happening, you know, and I just had a feeling. I thought if I look over and try to see who's doing it, I'm going to see something I do not want to see. So I'm just going to lay here and hope it'll stop and go away. And I was just petrified. You know, I don't know if you ever felt that type of fear where you're just petrified. You can't do a thing.
Sure.
And it did, you know, I mean, I put the covers and I just lay there. I mean, I'm a teenager, you know, I'm 16, 17 years old and just tried to like think it's got to go away. It's got to go away because I just did not want to get up. I didn't want to see anything. I was just really scared of what I might, you know, look and find out. Mm-hmm. So, and that was probably the scariest thing that ever happened to me, you know, honestly.
Sure. And that would be horribly terrifying. When you moved out, was your mother still living there? Did you all leave as a family? Or did you leave when you turned into an adult and your mother still stayed there?
My brother and I actually lived there for a couple years. And my mother had actually remarried and she kept the house and she let us stay there. So
you stayed there actually. Okay. Because obviously your mom had experiences there too. Once she left the house and it was you and your brother, and this seemed to be a lot of focus on you and your brother as children, but then you got to be adults. Did the activity slow down at all as you got older? Did it increase? What did you experience?
It did slow down. And I've heard different people talk about poltergeist activity centering on adolescence and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there was any of that going on, but it did slow down. I think in a way the house got used to us. And it's kind of strange because there's almost like a peace you achieve with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there was one point, I mean, a really funny, really weird story is, so my family went on vacation. We were like teenagers. We went on vacation and we were gone for almost 2 weeks and we had someone looking after our animals and so the house was locked up tight about 2 weeks. And so when we came home from the vacation, there was this, my brother's room had just completely been demolished. Mm-hmm. And so this was the room that we used to share when we were kids. And I had moved into another room and he was still living there, staying in that room, which he used to tell me that he used to actually sleep with the fan on at night so he wouldn't hear voices talking, which I never knew till we were older.
Yeah.
So we came home and his room was just demolished. It was the only room in the house touched. And there was just stuff, I mean, strewn everywhere. Like someone went through it. There was like someone had taken crayons or whatever they could find, any kind of like, and just all over the ceiling. And, you know, we were young enough that there's no way we could have reached the ceiling. I mean, we weren't there, but even my family suspected, oh, it's neighbor kids or something broke in.
Yeah.
Even though nothing was taken, nothing else was, you know, I just remember everywhere. We had to repaint the room. We had to pick everything up, just clean everything out. And it was just that room. And, you know, and really looking back on it, I think that it was probably them throwing a fit because we were gone and they thought they've left. Where'd they go?
Yeah. It's almost like they wanted you back. As much as it seemed like they wanted you gone while you were there, they seemed to miss you while you were gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange. It's very strange. Yeah. Because I don't know. It's almost like you reach like this equilibrium with the house.
Yeah.
And you sort of have an understanding with each other. And it's almost like this, you know, like I said, it could be scary. It could also be, you know, just strange, you know, and you just don't know. And I don't know what the intentions were sometimes.
Sure.
I mean, one of the things that happened when I was a teenager, actually, and this is where it kind of goes into that weird intention is I used to play guitar a lot and I was trying to practice some riff or something. I was trying to get down and I've been working on it for about 30 minutes going back and forth over it. And so I was actually up in my room practicing, you know, and had the amp on and electric guitar and I was doing that for about 30 minutes and I finally got it down and I felt pretty good about myself. And I just heard from about 6 feet away from me, just someone clapping.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was my brother. I said, oh, you know, that's real funny, you know, expletive, you know.
Sure.
And it wasn't, you know, I looked up and there was no one there. And so then I looked around, I went a little further, you know, he was in his room. Nobody was in the house actually at the time. My mom was somewhere else and we were just alone. And I thought, oh no, you know, and I just had to go sit on the outs on the steps and just sit there because it was so, you know, it was so unnerving, mm-hmm. you know? So it's almost, you know, so in a way I feel like that in that way they were, you know, it was almost like they were being funny, you know, like sarcastic or so. I don't know. Maybe they really appreciated it. I don't know. But I feel like a sarcastic sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because at times it seemed like they were very unwelcoming, almost trying to scare you and put fear into you, which would normally kind of mean, you know, get out. And then at times they're clapping along to your music. Why do you think the entities seem to be so unwelcoming? And do you think there was more than one in there, many with different personalities?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that, well, okay, here's another. I'll get to, here's a very scary story too. So,
sure.
So that happened to my brother that sort of reinforced that there might be more than one. So I think there were some that were, I think there were at least maybe two children in the house. And I think that's the ones I think that were actually that they would go around and kind of do stuff in the rooms and our upstairs rooms and kind of mess with stuff. Sometimes toys would be left out. You'd see toys arranged in weird formations or you'd put something somewhere and you wake up in the morning and it would be placed somewhere else, almost like they were playing with stuff or looking at things. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there were a couple children. But then I also think there were maybe the older gentleman my mother saw, and maybe one more, I'm not quite sure, but at least one seemed to. So one of the things, the really scary things that happened to my brother was heard this sound I heard this just the loudest, like somebody knocking on the door, like bam, 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 you know. And it was the middle of winter. I had to be about 14, something like that. And middle of winter. And as I was coming downstairs to see what was going on at the door, my dad was coming, you know, to see the door too, to get the door to look and see what was happening. And you know, he opens up the door and my brother is standing out there just in his, you know, tidy whiteies, just, you know, it's middle of winter and, you know, in Kansas, snow on the ground. You know, yeah. Outside screaming, and he's screaming that someone, that they're trying to get him, that they're chasing him. And we're like, well, who's trying to, you know, well,
sure.
Dude, what are you talking about? And he said that he came down to get a glass of water. And he said he was in the back room. He went to the kitchen, which was the adjoining to the back room and the laundry room that the, that was attached to the bathroom that was kind of creepy. The door was kind of open and he heard someone talking. He heard like a group of people talking.
Okay.
And he kind of opened up the, you know, and kind of peered in a little bit to try to see if he could hear. And he said that he heard them discussing us, the family. And at one point, one of them says, what are we going to do about them, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other one said, you know, we have to get rid of him. And then he said, and then the other one, then all of a sudden, it's almost like he felt like they saw him or recognized he was around. And they said, you hear that, boy? You know, we're coming to get you or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And yeah, really scary. So he ran out the back door, ran out the back door. And around the front of the house. And so what was really scary about that too is, you know, we looked, there were no tracks in the snow except for my brother's, you know?
Yeah.
So there was no one around, you know? And, you know, so that was a really scary, he was extremely frightened. And he talks about it today, you know, how frightening it was and just how he thought they were actually going to grab him. And that's where I think that there were more than one.
Sure.
I think that they, you know, they had a, I don't know if there's a ringleader or sort of leader, you know, somebody that took charge of them or manipulated the other ones. But I do think, yeah, first they wanted us out of there and then they sort of got used to us, you know, and just decided, oh, maybe it's not worth the effort. I don't know. So,
yeah,
or maybe they diminished in strength. I don't know either.
And it's almost interesting to hear that they were almost kind of conspiring, like, let's go get him. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're a parent hearing that about the ghosts in your house, let's go get your son. Yeah. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Richard. In part two, what does Richard think the entities were so unwelcoming to his family? Why were they so unwelcoming to his family? And what were some of the experiences that Richard's parents had in the house themselves? What happened when Richard's... redo this whole part. That wraps up part one of our conversation with Richard. In part two, what does Richard think the entities were doing and why were they so unwelcoming to his family? What were some of the experiences that Richard's parents had in the house? What happened when Richard's aunt found a murder? What happened when Richard's aunt found a murder weapon in her house? And how did it anger a spirit? And what sits on the plot of land where that house once sat today? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. You can do it through Apple Podcasts. Just go to our Apple Podcast page and click subscribe. Or patreon.com/realghoststories or thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. Get access to all of our episodes in their entirety, bonus episodes, part twos, and everything commercial free. Check it out, thegravetalks.com or through Apple Podcasts, where you can even try 3 days free. Yeah, check it out. Try it out for yourself on Apple Podcasts right now. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.